Great. Well, thank you. Thank you, Endocrine Society, for organizing this this event, and thank you to the steering committee for the invitation to be here with you today. I'm going to take you through the use of sensor technology as it relates to severe hypoglycemia and hypoglycemia unawareness. Here are my disclosures. And first, we're going to start off by talking about the definition of hypoglycemia and the impact it has in clinical care. Then I'm going to take you through CGM technology, kind of from the origins all the way up to present day, focusing then on CGM trials as they relate to specifically to hypoglycemia, and then talk about where this leads the field for the future. So to start, we'll begin with a case. This is a 54-year-old gentleman who comes into your clinic with type 1 diabetes. He's had diabetes for many, many years, since age 11. This is a patient you've seen over and over. You know him very well. He's just coming in for routine follow-up, pretty well controlled. He's got some mild retinopathy, but otherwise very active, does a wonderful job with self-management. You know this patient. They come in just, hey, can you sign my driver's form? I just need that signed and faxed in, like, tomorrow, please. And he occasionally has hypoglycemia, maybe sometimes in the morning, but he really says, I always feel it. I'm always able to treat it. It's never been a problem for me. He checks a couple times a day. You look at his log. He's probably not checking as much as you'd like, but he's doing two or three a day, so that's kind of a success. And really, they're all kind of in that 90 to 160 range, and you feel pretty good about it. So, and his A1Cs tend to run kind of sixes, just very well-controlled guy. So what would you do? Again, you know, busy endocrine clinic. You've got 10 minutes. You're already a half hour behind. You got these forms to sign, fax back. What would you do? I mean, I think for a lot of us, myself included, you would maybe take a look at this patient and say, you know, he's doing fine. Let's, you know, this is an easy one for the day. Let's just move on. Well, as it turned out, this patient was part of one of our research protocols, and so he was fitted with a two-week CGM, blinded to himself, and he came back 2 weeks later to have it downloaded. And we were astonished when we looked at the ambulatory glucose profile, the AGP that came from it. You can see here that this patient is spending almost the entire night hypoglycemic. So from about averaging about 1 a.m. to 7 a.m., he's quite profoundly hypoglycemic. And it's night after night. The solid line there is the median. So you can see his median glucose overnight is consistently below 50 milligrams per deciliter. And he is completely unaware of this. He has no idea this is happening. He's waking up usually right around 7 or so in the morning, and he's, you know, kind of in the 80 to 100 range, and checking throughout the day in here, where he's typically a little bit higher. If we look at the daily reports, the breakout of each day, you can see day after day he's hypoglycemic overnight. On this day, he's not only hypoglycemic 8 hours overnight, but he spends another 8 hours low that evening as well, totaling 63% of the day with a CGM blood glucose less than 70 milligrams per deciliter. And he has no idea. He's otherwise just feels great and goes about his day. More, you know, day after day, again, the same pattern over and over. The daytime when he's checking and you actually have some data from his SMBG meter, you see he's either normal or high. So really, these are completely unknown to him. So we took his AGP and kind of broke it out to when he eats and when he goes to bed and looked at his insulin doses. So he's gone 34 units of glargine at bedtime and takes aspart with meals. And so the first thing we did is drop that dose of glargine. And then we even dropped his dinner aspart a little bit just to make sure that that wasn't contributing to the hypoglycemia. Still, he was still running a little bit low overnight, so we dropped him further to 18 units, basically cutting his glargine dose in half from where it already was. And that following that those changes, 2 months later when he came back, we had normalized his average glucose and eliminated that hypoglycemia. You can see here the median now is relatively flat. On the report, you get an estimated A1C. His A1C did come up a little bit. Before it was 6.1, now it's 7.1. but you know, we'll take it because this is a much better looking profile than what he had before. And even if it's raising his average 3-month glucose, that's okay. We're avoiding that hypoglycemia. And this patient's not alone. We see these patients day after day. About half of our patients with type 1 diabetes will have severe hypoglycemia each year. Most patients average about 3 episodes a year. The consequences can be fatal. It can be seizure, loss of consciousness. It's estimated that hypoglycemia and its consequences account for about $2 to $4 billion of healthcare expenditure in terms of ER visits and hospitalizations. And it remains one of the biggest barriers to optimal management in type 1 diabetes. In fact, the ADA this year in the standards of care went as far as to say that hypoglycemia is the major limiting factor in glycemic management in type 1 and type 2. I'm not going to go into type 2 today. That's a completely separate story, but that idea is out there that we could potentially use hypoglycemic consequences with type 2. So let's look a little bit further at these consequences. In our patients with type 1 diabetes, it's estimated that up to 10% of deaths are attributed to hypoglycemia. It's well documented that hypoglycemia leads to cardiac arrhythmias. So particularly in our older patients or those with comorbidities, this is a big problem. And we know that patients with HAF syndrome, the hypoglycemic associated autonomic failure, are about 25% or more at higher risk for severe hypoglycemia as they are on intensive insulin therapy, multiple shots and pumps and so on. So this is another case. Many of you might be familiar with this. This is from Tannenberg's group in 2010. And this was an unfortunate case, a type 1 patient who was having several episodes of severe hypoglycemia. The patient came into clinic and was fitted with a 72-hour retrospective, blinded CGM so that they could get some data and try to help this patient because the other interventions they had done really weren't working. And so this patient put on the CGM and went home, and unfortunately in the morning of day 2 passed away from hypoglycemia. The CGM was then reviewed retrospectively, and you can see on here the patient was running high the evening before, and down here in the purple are several little boluses, and the patient just stacks insulin too much and has a precipitous drop in glucose that was completely unannounced to the patient. Patient completely unaware and went to bed. There's 2 little spikes here, which potentially are the body trying to mount a counter-regulatory hormone response, but they weren't enough to surmount the hypoglycemia, and by 8 o'clock the following morning, the patient had expired. And so as we talk about hypoglycemia and as we seek to study it, first we have to define it. And defining hypoglycemia is a lot harder than you think. This is the ADA definitions, and there's other definitions out there, but we'll just go with these for right now. So typically, glucose alert value or a level 1 hypoglycemia. And if I asked all of you, is that patient having level 1 or level 2 hypoglycemia, it's a little confusing. So this is level 1 is less than or equal to 70 milligrams per deciliter. And this would be the level where patients should be taking action, some sort of, you know, it should prompt the patient to make a change or maybe check more frequently or do something. Level 2 would be clinically significant hypoglycemia, less than. Note this is less than but not equal to 54 milligrams per deciliter. And this would be sufficiently low to prompt immediate action. And then we get to severe hypoglycemia, which doesn't have a specific glucose threshold. This is just hypoglycemia that requires third-party assistance with severe cognitive impairment. Now, severe hypoglycemia is not the same thing as impaired awareness of hypoglycemia. And that's an important distinction to make. Impaired awareness of hypoglycemia is recurrent episodes of hypoglycemia, usually severe, that lead to a defect in the counter-regulatory response so that patients lose that ability to sense and respond to hypoglycemia on their own. So repeated severe hypoglycemia will lead to impaired awareness of hypoglycemia, but they're slightly different entities. So who's at risk for this? And after Dr. Baldwin's talk today, I'm going to add CKD to this list. But really, the biggest risk for this is having it on beforehand. So if you have severe hypoglycemia in the last 6 months, it's likely to repeat itself. Severe hypoglycemia begets severe hypoglycemia. It turns out that even a few days of hypoglycemia can be a risk for severe hypoglycemia. Now, people have looked at that. Could you really study the 1 or 2 days before an episode and tell patients, you know, if you're having a lot more lows today and tomorrow, be really, really careful on day three because you're likely to go low. And unfortunately, the positive predictive value for this is quite low, so we really can't use that clinically really to train patients. Really, it's somewhat of a retrospective notion. The longer patients have diabetes, of course, the higher their risk for severe hypos. The extremes of age, so both the young and the old, male in some studies, intensive therapy, and of course those with impaired awareness and that hypoglycemia-associated autonomic failure syndrome or HAF would be at risk as well. So now I'm going to take you through the evidence behind this, and let's just kind of try to put some numbers and some context to this. And we'll go all the way back to the DCCT, which is where a lot of our, our stories start. And, of course, this was a randomized trial, 1,441 patients with type 1 diabetes randomized to intensive therapy, which is either multiple daily injections or pump versus conventional therapy. And those in the intensive group were 3 times as likely to have severe hypoglycemia as the conventional group. Now take a look at these numbers. 62 episodes per 100 patient years in the intensive group versus 19 in the conventional group. And this was kind of our first glimpse at this. And the idea at that point was, well, we lowered A1C and really reduced the risk of complications in this trial. So, you know, hypoglycemia is just the consequence of that, and it's something we need to be mindful of and avoid as best we can, but really that's just the fact of life. We're going to have to deal with hypoglycemia. So remember that, 62 per 100 patient years. So where did that lead us? How did we start to manage hypoglycemia at that point? Well, over 30 years ago, Dr. Cox at UVA and his group started a program called BGAT, so Blood Glucose Awareness Training. And this was an intensive psychoeducational program for patients to learn how to anticipate and treat and prevent hypoglycemia in the real world. And this was done through education, frequent visits. This has been well validated in many randomized control trials. And it's ongoing. There is still a lot of work going on in this area. There's new platforms. There's web-based systems. There's all sorts of cool things happening with BGAT programs. So this started out as the effective approach to mitigating hypoglycemia. It works, and it's really kind of the fundamental pillar to managing hypoglycemia. Well, shortly after that, continuous glucose monitoring came along. In fact, CGM was sort of envisioned 40 years ago, 40 plus years ago, but didn't really come into clinical practice until the late 90s. And even then, it was retrospective. The real-time CGM that we use now for most outpatients is less than 20 years old. But as CGM came into use, we started to bring that goal of diabetes management into focus. Let's lower the A1C, but also reduce or at least prevent the progression of hypoglycemia. And from that point, you know, forward, that's really been our goal in therapy. And in this meta-analysis, it did show that on average, CGM does reduce A1C and also reduces hypoglycemia, all hypoglycemia, not necessarily just severe hypoglycemia. So the evidence started to come in. First came the JDRF trial in 2008, looking at patients in 3 different age groups, children to adolescents, adolescents to young adults, and then adults over age 25. They took 322 patients, reasonably controlled type 1 diabetes, followed them for 6 months, and they either received SMBG, conventional SMBG, or CGM use. and they were looking at change in A1C as the primary outcome. Now, I'll point out that in many of these studies, A1C is always the primary outcome. They're very A1C-centric, and as we advance in the world, I'll challenge you to start thinking of things other than A1C as our goal in therapy, or at least trying to factor in hypoglycemia as one of your endpoints. It turned out only the adults age 25 and higher showed a decrease in their A1C, and this was largely explained by them wearing the CGM more than 80% of the time, or 80% greater than 6 days per week. The children in the group, the age 8 to 14, only wore it about half the time. So numerically, there was less hypoglycemia in the CGM group, so we lowered A1C, reduced hypoglycemia. This is great. This is our goal. But there was no change in severe hypoglycemia between either intervention. They point out that the study wasn't powered for that, and of course it wasn't. It wasn't even a pre-specified outcome, so we can't really draw solid conclusions from this. But the idea that numerically reducing hypoglycemia doesn't really correlate to reducing severe hypoglycemia is an interesting notion, and that still plagues us to this day in clinical trials, and I'll show you more evidence for that. Based on that study, we started to ask the question, well, if pump works, or if CGM works to lower A1C, doesn't really, maybe helps hypoglycemia, what if we add a pump to this? And the STAR-3 trial then in 2010 came along looking at that, so randomizing people to either MDI versus pump with sensor. And again, the primary outcome here was A1C, and lo and behold, we saw a very nice decrease in A1C. However, when you look at hypoglycemia, there was no difference in all hypoglycemia, including severe hypoglycemia, between the two groups. There were 13 per 100 episodes per patient year episodes in each group. Remember back to DCCT, I told you that the intensive group had 62. So there could be some bias here. The study did exclude people with severe hypo and hypo unawareness, and patients already had quite a bit of education. So it's possible that there was some bias here. And the thought was that the CGM helped reduce the hyperglycemia and bring the overall average down rather than bringing the hypoglycemia up. So that started us on the pathway of thinking about CGM as a tool to really reduce glucose variability and potentially exploit the technology to one day help us with hypoglycemia. And Aaron Kowalski at JDRF sort of envisioned this pathway for us to get to the final outcome of a fully closed loop artificial pancreas, which of course would lower A1C and resolve hypoglycemia. And we started off here not all that long ago. This is just 4 years ago. 2013 was the Aspire trial that showed threshold suspend pumps, sensor-augmented pumps with threshold suspend will reduce nocturnal hypoglycemia by 38%. And note here that hypoglycemia is, for one of the first times, a primary outcome. So now we're actually looking at hypoglycemia change here. They did not show a change in A1C, so really this was looking more at the hypoglycemia risk. And across the board, you can see that the threshold suspend group on the left side had less hypoglycemia than the control group, so the time less than 70, 60 to 70, 50 to 60, and then less than 50, so it reduced all of them. All of the severe hypo episodes were in the control group, so there was none in the intervention group. And in that control group, that translated to 13 episodes per 100 patient years, so exactly the same as the STAR-3 trial. Now, again, they note that this wasn't powered nor designed to look at severe hypoglycemia, but it's certainly hypothesis generating, and we get the idea that maybe we can reduce hypoglycemia and also avoid severe hypoglycemia as well with this technology. So now moving into studies that actually look at those with impaired awareness and severe hypoglycemia. This is Pratik Chaudhry's group in the UK, King's College, who did a study, probably one of the first to actually ask this question, does CGM help those with severe hypo and those with impaired awareness to hypo? And they took 35 patients who weren't who had received education, and despite that, were still struggling. And they put them on this GOLD score. And for those of you unfamiliar with the GOLD score, it's a very straightforward visual analog scale that patients answer the question, "Do you know when hypoglycemia is commencing?" And they check 1 for always, 7 for never, and 4 and higher is generally considered to be impaired awareness to hypoglycemia. And what they found is that no matter what you did, if you put them on a low glucose suspend or no glucose suspend CGM system, there was a decrease in severe hypoglycemia. Again, very small study, 35 patients, but certainly promising that potentially CGM on top of that intensive education could show benefit in reducing severe hypoglycemia. Then came along the HypoCompass study, which was one of the largest studies to ask a similar question, looking at, is one strategy better than another for reducing severe hypo and restoring awareness? And this looked at MDI and pump, both with and without CGM, and they had 96 patients with a primary outcome of GOLD score at 24 weeks. And most of these patients had diabetes for 29 or so years. And what they found is that severe hypoglycemia was reduced by almost 60% across the board. Really impressive. And for the first time, we've demonstrated that we can restore hypoglycemic awareness. So the GOLD score went down. Great news, right? Well, it turns out that it doesn't matter what you do. Pump, no pump, MDI, sensor, no sensor, doesn't matter. Everybody in this study had that same outcome. So really, this didn't really answer the question, does CGM help restore awareness and reduce severe hypo? Turns out, however, in this group, the CGM group only wore the sensor about 57% of the time, and of those, less than 20% wore it more than 80%. And we've known for a while from some of those other things I showed you that the more you wear the sensor, the better it works for you. And this can be kind of shown when they ask the patients who wore CGM, nearly 3/4 of them said it helped them avoid severe hypoglycemia, even though the data would argue otherwise. So the conclusions from that study was that things that we have readily available, like education, can work really well to avoid severe hypo. And this can be done whether you're on MDI or pump, or whether or not you use a sensor. The next study, and really these are kind of the major studies in this field, was the in-control study from last year. And this was a crossover CGM to SMBG or vice versa with a washout in between. And they took 52 patients, a little bit longer duration of diabetes, and they had GOLD scores a little bit higher at 5.4, and looked at the time in range, the time in normal glycemia as their outcome. And here I put the milligrams per deciliter for you, but you can see across the board improvements in all of the hypoglycemia metrics. So time in range, time below range, duration of hypo episodes, nocturnal hypoglycemia, all of them were improved in the CGM group. If you drill down to look at all the hypoglycemia, CGM in blue here was reduced compared to the SMBG group. And if you look at severe hypo, there was a significant decrease in all severe hypo with CGM. However, if you look at the darker pink and the red down here, this is severe hypo that resulted in coma or hospitalization. CGM did not really resolve those or reduce them. Again, leading back to this idea that perhaps there's just something different about severe hypo in that really severe sense that's just different than your other hypoglycemia. And these patients, interestingly, did not have a change in GOLD score, so we did not restore awareness. So comparing these two studies, they're somewhat a little bit conflicting. They did use older CGM technology, so perhaps it wasn't as accurate. The populations were a little different. That first study I showed you had really intensive education, frequent follow-ups. They used an insulin-based calculator. So potentially maybe those things in people not on CGM were enough to help them. Sensor use looks to be much different between the two. So there's slight differences. And I won't belabor you with the other trials, but just to note that other studies that look at hypoglycemia in general with CGM Typically, all find a reduction in hypoglycemia with either no or slight reduction in A1C. So how do we bring that into practice, and where do we take that? Well, let's look at the patients who are at highest risk of severe hypo. And this was a T1D exchange, a large database of type 1 patients at high risk for hypo. These were patients older than 60 who, you know, up until very recently have not had the luxury of using CGM technology. And they were matched with 100 patients who did not have severe hypo. And you can see the things that turned out to be risk factors were hypo unawareness and having hypo symptoms and glucose variability. What's really interesting is A1C did not correlate at all with your risk of severe hypo. And we know also from the T1D exchange that patients with over age 60 tend to have lower A1Cs. I know it's in guidelines, and we always think about it, that maybe these patients we should aim for a slightly higher A1C target because that's going to help avoid hypoglycemia. And it turns out that that's not the case. Raising their A1C is not going to help prevent their severe hypoglycemia. What will help them is identifying those patients who do have unawareness to hypoglycemia or don't have symptoms, or those who have a lot of variability. Those should be the patients we target. So very interesting and kind of changes somewhat how I think about it. So where are we now? Well, if we move along this this pathway, we got to hypoglycemia minimizers, and this study in children looked at a pump that not only suspends on a low blood sugar, but will predictively suspend before the patient hits a low blood sugar. And you can see across the board, it helps reduce hypoglycemia. At the extreme end, the less than 50, perhaps not as robust of a decrease as you see in the overall less than 70 range. Again, maybe there's just something a little bit different about hypoglycemia less than 50 that we're just not understanding. And coming full circle up to the present day, we now have the first hybrid closed loop system commercially available in the U.S. as of earlier this year. This was a study that we were fortunate to be part of, 124 patients at 10 centers internationally looking at the closed loop device. And A1C did decrease 0.5%, and you can see the metrics of time and range all reduced, including the nocturnal lows were cut in half. Now, this wasn't a randomized study. There's no control group, but there was no severe hypo in the study. Again, really not confirming or suggesting anything other than it's an interesting hypothesis that potentially this technology could help us avoid severe hypo. So then we ask the question, well, maybe sensor technology is just getting good enough and sensor, you know, maybe hybrid closed loop isn't for everyone, and there are going to be patients who don't want to use pumps. So what do we do for them? Well, this recent study, the Diamond study, looked at MDI patients and randomized them to CGM versus SMBG and looked at A1C as the primary outcome. A1C did decrease nicely by 0.6%, and the time below 70 was cut nearly in half, so from 43 minutes per day in the CGM group compared to 80 minutes per day in the SMBG group. And if you look at the time below range, again, nearly a third or a threefold decrease in the time below 50, so quite potent. However, there is no change in severe hypo, so a little bit, again, of that idea, what is severe hypo a little bit different? So moving forward, what we need from this field and where this field needs to go is better technology. We need patients to be more comfortable wearing it and wear it longer. Maybe that means miniaturizing it. Maybe that means factory calibrating it, better insulins, newer closed loop. All of these things, to me, I think are going to pave the way to helping us meet that goal of reducing hypoglycemia and reducing A1C. So take home, what should you do in clinic next week? I would encourage you to maybe start at least keeping a note or even documenting gold scores in the chart. This will help you identify these patients at very high risk for hypoglycemia. And then from there, get them into education and think about pump versus plus or minus CGM. So to wrap up, CGM is appropriate for patients with type 1 diabetes at risk for hypoglycemia. It's been shown in multiple studies to reduce the amount and severity of hypoglycemia. However, the extent to which it reduces severe hypoglycemia and restores awareness to hypoglycemia has yet to be seen and is currently being investigated. There could just be something about severe hypoglycemia that has a different pathophysiology that we just don't understand yet or can't be addressed by our current technology. And further technologies, including data platforms, data sharing, hybrid closed loop systems that you'll hear about more this afternoon, all of those might help us achieve that goal. So with that, I'll thank you.